Blog Talk Radio.
You can't do that. What are you thinking? You are not good enough. You are not going to get that job. You don't have an education. What? That is for smart people, not you. That outfit doesn't look good on you. You look ridiculous. You want to go where? With what? Money you don't have? Remember, you're broke and worthless. Nobody loves you. This is the voice of the toxic ego, the voice that is holding you back from your divine life. Dr. Nydia is here to guide you in learning to let go of this voice. She is here to teach you inner work, a journey through the soul, to empower you in creating a passageway to spiritual development. Dr. Nydia received her PhD from Union Institute and University in Psychology with emphasis in addiction studies. She is a registered clinical social worker intern and received her master's degree from Barry University. She is a certified addiction professional for the state of Florida. She is also a Reiki master, healing touch practitioner, and a master hypnotherapist. For more information, visit her website at www.dranidia.com. Dr. Nydia. Now, please welcome your host of Inner Work, Dr. Nydia.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Nydia, and Alma's around here somewhere. She'll be back soon. Today's topic is, what is today's topic? Today's topic is your gift. What gift? What is your mission? We wonder, we go through most of our lives wondering, so what's next? Is this all there is to life? And for the most part, we don't know, simply because we're not paying attention. It's as simple as that. We're not paying attention. You have a gift. You came onto this planet to do something. You didn't come just to pass time and you were born, then you go through life, you do really nothing, and then you die. Is it that simple, or is that the difficult way of going through life? Because you never know what's next. See, when you're creating your life, you know what's next. You know exactly what's next because you're planning it. And yeah, there are changes. And I have people that say, yeah, but what? You're creating it. Most of the time, we give up because we don't see any improvement in what we want. And so we get stuck in a rut. Every day is the same thing. You get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you may or may not take a shower, you eat breakfast, you go to work, you come back, and then you go home, and you go eat your dinner, and you watch television, and you may or may not take a shower or a bath. You go to bed, and then the next morning you do the same thing all over again. And after a while, you become bored. You become bored with the people around you. You become bored with your spouses and children. And after a while, you just give up and you just exist. And life is not made to just exist. You need to live, not just exist. Existing means going through the routine and going through the boredom and going through the rut and being and staying in that rut. When in reality, living means going after your passion. What's your passion? Do you know what your passion is? Do you know what your gift is? A lot of times we're looking for our gift and we don't realize that it's right in front of us. It's been there all along. What is consistent in your life? In other words, what do people complain the most about with you? What do they say is your worst attribute or ability. You talk too much, or you don't talk enough, or you're too anal, or you're too explosive. Well, look at that. If you don't talk much, then what is it that you do want to do when you don't talk much, or you're not social enough, you don't hang out with enough people? You know, people have done things. People who don't like to be with other people have created things that have helped humanity. You have to understand, look at Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison dedicated his life to the light bulb. Alexander Bell, he dedicated his life to the phone. And the thing is that they didn't dedicate their life. It was a passion for them. That's all they wanted to do. They were married with kids, and their kids and family took second place. They spent 99% of their waking time looking for what it was that they were looking for, because they knew. The key word here is knew. They knew. When you know. See, a lot of times we waste a lot of time looking. And we're looking and we're looking and we're looking and we're looking in the wrong place. Your mission is right there in front of you. What is it that you like to do the most? But everybody tells you that that's your biggest defect. See? My supposedly deepest defect was I talk too much. And so everybody always told me to shut up. And even today people tell me to shut up. But when I was a child, my whole family would tell me I talk too much. Shut up. Be quiet. You don't know what you're talking about. And so I became, I had a complex. I was afraid. I couldn't stop talking. It wasn't that I was talking because I wanted to talk. I was talking because that's who I was. That was my gift. I didn't know it was my gift. Nobody knew it was my gift, but that was my gift. And so when people would tell me to be quiet, it created in me this kind of complex that I didn't know what to say. They told me I didn't know what I was talking about. They told me I was talking a lot of trash. So I became, my self-esteem was very, very low because I couldn't help but talk. Like I had a machine inside of me that just opened my mouth and stuff just came out. And so one day it occurred to me that why don't I learn stuff? So I started learning stuff. And so I would talk about what I had learned. But it wasn't really important stuff. It was just stuff like trivia. Who wants, you know, after a while, people who give you trivia, they become boring because they're repeating the same thing over and over again. So I went back to school. And so I put my gift in a place where it would do good for humanity. How do I... Somebody said to me, make a list. Make a list of everything you want to do. And talking was not really what I wanted to do, so I didn't even put it on there. However, when I ended up with three things. I wanted to do something for humanity. I wanted to be a stand-up comic, and what was the other one? I got to write these down. Every now and then I forget.
Do good for humanity.
Do good for humanity, that's the one. The other one was, what did I just say?
Stand-up comedy.
Stand-up comic, and help other people, of course.
Yes, okay.
Okay, so... I said, well, how can I do that? First of all, I'm not a comedian, but I wanted to be a stand-up comic, nevertheless. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I took some psychology courses. And I had taken some computer courses a long time ago, and then I took psychology courses, and then I took social work courses, and then things started to fall into place. And when I went to do my PhD, I had already been doing some workshops. And I said, okay. And I'd been doing some workshops on helping others. And so when I went to do my PhD, I already had my whole dissertation written, pretty much, with the workshops that I was doing. All I had to do was put it together. So I decided, okay, so I'm going to focus on people with addiction. And so it turned out, the way I discovered was, one, there is only one addiction. Everything else is a symptom. See? And so my model of recovery worked for everybody, even people who didn't have an addiction the way we know it, you know, a symptom of the addiction. In other words, I focused on people with alcohol and drug problems. And then I discovered that it's good for everybody, for codependents. It works for people who have gambling issues, all kinds of issues. Every person on the planet could benefit from what I was teaching because I didn't focus on a specific problem. I focused on the basis why the bottom, the deepest level of what is happening when we have an addiction or when we have psychological issues, what used to be called neurosis. And so it turned out that it worked for everybody. And I'm going like, hello? And to me, it was fun. I wasn't working. I wasn't struggling. It was fun. What was a struggle for me were the classes that had nothing to do with what I wanted to do. So I had to do all those classes in order to do the last thing that I wanted to do, which was my dissertation, and introduce to the world a new model of recovery, a new model of self-help. And everything that you read is useful. See, in my model, I don't discard anything. I don't say my model is the best and you have to stop doing all the others. No, it doesn't work that way. Every little bit helps. And I've noticed, because I've gone through every self-help book in history, and I've read and heard and gone to workshops and been exposed to a lot of different methods of self-help. And so what I've discovered is that there is not one thing that's going to help you. There just isn't, because we're all different. What works for Alma may not work for me, and what works for me may not work for Betty. It's just a whole tangled web of change. And it's good. It's a good thing, because you get a little bit from here and a little bit from there. And before you know it, these are seeds that are being planted within you. And anybody who's gone through self-help books knows that you maybe have listened to one person for a long, long time. Then suddenly you start listening to somebody else. And what the first person said to you in their teachings suddenly makes sense.
Yes.
Because now they're explained, it's the same thing. It's just explained a little different. So yes. It's like, click, oh, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
See? So it's not just one thing. These are seeds that we're all planting. And at some point, all those seeds are going to come together and boom.
Excuse me to interrupt you, but...
Hello.
Hi, I'm sorry. Hello. I think one of the most important things in the way you teach is you base your teaching in examples. And that's very good for people, because sometimes you explain the right way in the right way
the process,
mm-hmm.
whatever process it is, addiction, dependency, mm-hmm. or whatever. But people, as they are not, as they don't think they are in that position, they cannot see the
right.
issue
right.
and what they have to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
But when you heard the examples, different examples, very, very different examples,
mm-hmm.
you see yourself in there.
Absolutely.
So you can say, wow, yeah, that's me. This is what is happening in my life. So they can so focus in the right.
One of the things that I discovered throughout everything I've done is that we have to identify with the problem or with another person that has gone through what I went through to be able to say, okay, see, it's like I'm not the only one in this mess. A lot of times we think that we're the only ones that are in trouble and we're the only ones that this happened to. If you talk to a person who's been in some kind of recovery, especially sexual abuse, now in this time in the world, people are coming forward and saying, I've been sexually abused by this one or that one or the other. And what happens is that somebody at some point gave them permission to come out and say, I've been, you know, this happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken a long time. It's like the 100th monkey theory. And the thing is that when one person says, this happened to me, everybody goes, oh, drama queen. But when two people or three people or 10 people or 100 people or 1,000 people are now saying, hey, this happened to me, you can't say, oh, drama queen anymore. You have to look at it and say, oh, wow, this is happening. This is really happening. You know, because people from all walks of life all over the world are coming out and saying, this happened to me. You know, and so now that's why we've become more, how can I say it? We're more open-minded to a lot of things today. We're in the beginning of this century. 100 years ago, a woman never said she got raped. She couldn't, because it would be a dishonor to her, to her family, to... It would be embarrassing. I remember when I was a child that when somebody got pregnant, nobody talked about it. The person who was pregnant, the underaged or the unmarried person, they would send them away. See? And all of a sudden, she'd come back with a little brother. And the mother would say, this is my child, when in reality, it was the daughter's child. It happened all the time, or they would give their children away because, you know, the child had nothing, did not have a say. You couldn't say, this is my child. You know, I'm 15 years old and I have a baby. Now, every 15-year-old has a baby, pretty much. You know, unwed mothers are not, in the 60s, you know, there were a lot of unwed mothers, and it was okay, you know, nobody said anything about it. But in the 20s, oh my God, no, you couldn't do that. And even in the 60s, when I ran away with my boyfriend, I was a disgrace to my family.
Mm-hmm.
And we were married. We got married. And then when we got divorced, I was a disgrace to the family again, because nobody in the family gets divorced. Now, please, you know, in those days, you didn't shack up with anybody. You were a slut if you shacked up with anybody.
Imagine in my country, people married and divorced to make a party.
To make a party?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody, you know, very young people, they married because that occasion to make a party.
And then they get divorced.
And, yeah, 2 or 3 months after, they get divorced.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And yet, in this country, that's not the way it was. But, you know, so... The whole idea is that things change, and we have to be able to be up to date with the changes and not be afraid to be who we are. you know, that in my time, a woman was a second-rate citizen. And nowadays, because of the changes that are happening, women's roles are really great. They're awesome. But, you know, I was brought up to think that because I'm a woman, I should get married and I should have children and I should be a slave to my family. That's a good woman. Nowadays, please, I see so many women giving up their children to become independent.
Yeah.
And so the whole point of this is that you have to find your mission. What is your mission? And it doesn't matter what it is. I know people who are so happy being waiters, being chefs, even though nowadays a chef makes good money, but, you know, doing stuff that some people think is menial, but they love what they're doing. I have a friend who's a doorman, and he loves being a doorman. And all of the people in his building love him because he's really a jack of all trades. And he does everything he does it with a smile. And sometimes when he's off duty, he'll go into somebody's apartment and fix something for them, you know. Mm-hmm. And they pay him, but he doesn't do it for them to pay him. They do it because this is what he loves to do. He practically lives in that building. Because, you know, he's always there doing something for somebody. And everybody knows him. He knows everybody. He knows everybody's birthday. He doesn't have to even write it down. Oh, today is so-and-so's cat's birthday. So he brings them a little gift for the cat. You know, and he remembers the children's birthdays and the adult's birthdays. And he knows who's getting married and who's getting divorced. And he's doing, he knows everything that's going on. And he loves it. That's his passion. He says, I would not want to do anything else. See? And sometimes I tell him, I don't want to go to school. No. And he's old. I mean, he's getting up there in age. And I tell him, don't you want to go to school and do something that's not so physically, you know, taxing on you? And he said, no, this is what I want to do. I want to die in this village. Huh?
Yeah.
And he's happy.
Yeah, because the important thing is doing what you like and
what you
love
to
do.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what it is.
It doesn't matter. And that's your passion. Whatever it is that you love to do and you can't do it, I mean, you just can't not do it, that's your passion. And you have to remember that if that's your passion, then that's what you have to do. That's what you have to go after because that's what's going to make you happy. And we worry a lot about the rent and the this, and we have to make car payments. And most of us live way amongst our means, way beyond our means. And it's important that we stop buying. We stop spending because we, and most of us, I don't know anybody who doesn't overspend.
Yeah.
Oh, I want this. I'll put it on a card. And then they have to get another card to pay off this card. And then before you know it, he's maxed out on all the cards. And so we tend to do that. We live beyond our means. And we have to learn just to slow down. You can't live your mission if you're stressed. If you're under a lot of stress, you can't live your mission. It can't happen because you're juggling 20 balls at one time.
Yeah.
You know that the car and the house and the kids and this and that and I know a lot of single people who have more debt than they have money to pay for it. And so every month it's oh my God, I have to borrow here and I have to borrow there. And then you borrow on top of borrowing on top of borrowing, and it's just not enough to pay back. See? And so we have to learn to get rid of everything in our lives that are things that we really don't need. A lot of stuff we don't need, and we don't know how to get rid of them. And we have to learn, get rid of this and get rid of that. And, you know, at home in my house, my son and I are starting to get rid of a lot of stuff. We have a lot of stuff stored in the back, and then we have chairs and we have tables and we have. And he said to me yesterday, Ma, I'm putting it out for the trash. Putting all that stuff that's in the patio, I'm putting it all out in the trash. I said, that's fine. I don't even want to see what's out there. just get rid of it. Because there's just too much. We tend to accumulate so much, and there's no room for anything. You could have a palace, and there's no room. Every room has something in it, and more than it really needs.
I know someone that is a compulsive buyer. This person has to buy something every day. Something that is not to be used now. Something because it's pretty, because maybe in this occasion I can use it as something, if we do a party or we do something, but this is something that doesn't exist. It's something
that
they
never use it.
No. So they have two or three storages. He pays.
Two or three storages.
Yeah. But when he needs whatever is in the storage, there's so many things they have to take out in order to
see what it is. To get what
then
he wants.
He goes and he buys another one.
Yeah.
And I tell him, but you are paying hundreds and thousands of dollars for these storages, and nothing that you have inside is useful for you. You know you have it, but you cannot use it.
Garage sale.
Yeah, but he's not going to do it.
Yeah. And see, that's the whole thing. There's a whole psychology behind that. You know, you don't want to let go. You need to control. That's the toxic ego.
Yeah, I think it's something related with he comes from a very poor family.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. It's toxic ego.
Of course, but he needs to accumulate things.
That's the toxic ego. That is exactly what the toxic ego does. Because I didn't have something in the past, now I have to have more than enough in the present.
Yeah.
And does it matter that I don't need it? You know, the toxic ego doesn't relate to common sense. It just says, well, this is what I want, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I'm going to get. And, you know, there's really not much you can do with a person like that until they start working on their toxic ego and getting rid of all that clutter that we have in our heads. Because the brain thinks that we need things, when in reality, we don't need all those things. See? What you have in your hands is all you need. When we move, you just moved.
Mm-hmm.
How much crap did you find that you didn't need?
A lot.
A lot. What did you do with it?
I put it in the trash.
You threw it away?
Yes.
There you go. Yeah, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that you just don't need. Not necessary. What you need is just one simple thing. Whatever you're using right now. But we don't, we tend to hoard. Even if it doesn't look like hoarding, we tend to hoard.
What is hoard?
Hoarding is when you don't throw anything away.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you can't move it around in your house because there's so much stuff. See, you have 15 dining room tables and you... this week is trash week, and one of my neighbors has thrown out. I was counting them this morning. He must have at least 15 sofas.
Oh my God!
15.
Where?
I counted 15 right there in the garbage because he threw them out.
Yeah, but he has it in his house.
In his house, he threw out the sofas. There must have been at least 15. He must have had about 12 or 13 the chairs, the sofa chairs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. and other odd stuff that I don't, it just didn't fit. It was from his fence to the walk. And not up to the sidewalk, up to the street where the cars go, up to the mailbox. And so I'm going like, oh my God, he emptied out the whole house. I mean, the house is where I live. I'm not that big to have that much furniture. But he had all that furniture. And I've been in the
house.
He has
a patio.
He has a, yeah, we all have patio. But he, his patio was pretty big. And I've seen a lot of that furniture in his patio where there's no room to move in his patio because of all that furniture. But there was some furniture there that I didn't even recognize, so it must have come from other places. Somebody's cleaning out the house for him.
Maybe he's using the city house the trash to clean up.
No. Every month we have trash day, so you put out there all the trash that you have. See, so the city comes by and picks it up, but that's what we pay for.
Yeah.
So, but it was funny that I looked and I said, "Oh my God!" And I started counting because I was coming out my driveway. I just kind of slowed down a little bit and it was kind of counting off the top of my head, and I'm going, oh my God, he's throwing away all this furniture. But it makes me wonder, you know, now is he replacing it? I haven't seen any trust there, but, you know, I haven't been around there all day either. Anyway, but that's what we do. We hoard. We have a lot of stuff that we don't need. And we have papers and books and, you know, now I'm leaving my job at the university, and I'm looking around and I'm saying, well, I'm not taking all these books home. So there's a lot of books that I'm going to leave there because what do I need them for?
So have you needed them for 5 years?
I've needed them because they're for my students. You know, the books that I use to teach. But there's a lot of books there that I don't teach those classes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't teach sociology anymore, and I don't teach, you know, there's a few other courses that I don't teach anymore. And the books just stay there because, you know, they're there. I never clean them out. And the books that I need for my students, yeah, I'm going to take them with me because I have to have them. But, and I'm thinking that they're going to give me students. I'm going to be an adjunct. But all the rest of the books that are there, I don't need them. And all the files that are there, they're the student files. Next week I'm gonna start shredding because those are files. You know, you have to keep certain things for a certain amount of time. But if I'm not going to be there, nobody's gonna take care of those files. So I have to shred them, make sure that all the confidential stuff is, of course, you know, doesn't get out. But there's a lot of papers and stuff that I, you know, I put them aside and then I forget about them. And I don't really have a big, big mess. There are other professors, oh my God, the professor next to me, he has boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff because he's, you know, he's an English professor. He's an education professor. And so he has all the courses for education.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole hell of a lot of them. There's like maybe 20, 30 of them because he teaches different, all the education courses. He's the director of the education course. But his office is small compared to mine. So you can't tell too much. And I only have 3 or 4 courses per semester, so it doesn't matter. I don't have that many. But it is what it is. You know, we tend to hoard. We hoard and we hoard and we put things away and I'm going to need this for later and I'm going to need this for later. And did you have to look through all of your stuff to start throwing stuff away?
No, because the thing is the stuff that I normally use was in a place and the stuff that I don't use, it was in a different place. So I just look little like that, and I didn't see anything important.
Yes. So you browse and you say, okay, I don't need that, I don't need that, okay, get rid of all that.
Yeah, because if you don't need it. I have my tax reports, in a secure place, my passport, my, you know, important things.
Right.
The rest is just papers.
There you go, garbage.
Papers, you know, I keep, not now, but I know it's important for the taxes, but I used to keep all the receipts for everything, for da-da-da-da. And I stopped to do that.
You stopped doing that?
Oh, my God, yes. I had cases and boxes and things. Please, it was a lot of paper.
Too much.
And at the end, I didn't, you know, I didn't.
You didn't use them.
No. If one day IRS come to me and tell me, show me how to tell them,
you're in trouble.
I don't have it.
Well, you know, poor people don't need to keep all that stuff because what do we have? A TV?
Yeah.
Same. And how much is it worth? Not much, of course. So it's a matter of, you know, it is what it is. Life is just too short to be drowning in all kinds of stuff that we don't even use. And so it's important because the more clutter we have around us, the more cluttered is our brain. You know how much clutter you have in your brain. When somebody looks around your house, they know exactly, you know, where you are. It's a matter of letting go of attachments. You want to find out who you truly are, let go of your attachments. We tend to just hang on to so many things. That's, you know, when we're in relationships and you try to control, your toxic ego is always controlling and always having to, you have to do things my way. And it has to be my way, and it can only be my way. And, you know, that's where were you? Do you still love me? Those kind of things. We are so attached. We have to have that car. We have to have that house. We have to have. Give me. And, you know, it's I need. We don't say I want. We never say I want. We say I need that car. I need that house. I need those clothes. I need those shoes. I need that big old TV, you know, 100 by 100. I want it to fit up my wall. I need a bigger wall. You know, when we're living like that, we can't find who we truly are. Where's your essence? See? Your toxic ego has. Have you ever heard the game Pac-Man?
No.
Well, Pac-Man eats.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And it eats everything.
Uh-huh.
See? We have to have a Pac-Man in our life to eat up all the stuff that isn't necessary. We think, see, when I was doing my dissertation, before I had to do my dissertation, I had boxes all over the house because every time I already knew what I was going to write about, but I had to do research.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I found an article that looked like I could use, I would put it in a box. And each box was identified with whatever the topic was. So I needed all of those because I knew I was going to be using them once I had to do my dissertation. And so I would separate and I would write things and put them in that box so that when it was time to, you know, do that chapter, I would take everything out of the box, organize it, and then write the chapter. And it was very good for me because I was very well organized.
Mm-hmm.
See, I just would throw stuff in the box. And then when every now and then, when I had little time, I would kind of separate it into the different parts of the chapter that I was going to write.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it was time for me to actually go in there and do my dissertation, I had a lot of that already done.
Yeah.
See? And so once I finished my dissertation, and turned it in, and it was approved and everything, and I got my dissertation, I didn't need those boxes anymore.
Of course.
My temptation was, I have to save all this stuff just in case. And then one day I said, no, I don't have to save any of this. All of this has already been condensed. It's been, you know, reviewed. And so that's, I don't need all these articles. I mean, they were good articles, but, you know, they were good tools that served their purpose. So I threw them away. I only kept what I needed. For instance, I kept the actual, you know, my notes for the dissertation stuff people signed, you know, the clearances, the approvals, and stuff like that. So, and that was in one little teeny-weeny box.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I had releases of information there from people who had signed and gave me permission to put stuff in my dissertation. And so I kept them long enough, you know, as long as the law allowed. And so then I threw them away also. I shredded all of that because I didn't need them anymore. Whole thing is that when things are no longer useful for you, if you haven't used anybody something in the last 6 months, throw it away.
Yeah.
And you know what happens? We throw things away, and then all of a sudden we need them. Right? Mm-hmm. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah.
Throw it away. Oh, damn, I needed that receipt.
Yes.
Or whatever it was. So what? Throw it away.
Let me tell you, I need to clean up my computer. I have a few hard drives full of things from 2006 or before.
Mm-hmm.
And I know most of that stuff is not useful for me, and I don't need it. But you have to have time to do that, because I don't want to. I know there is something that is important that I keep, because
mm-hmm.
it's part of my life, and I don't want to lose it. But
right.
But I have, if my hard drive were my house,
you could walk. It's a good thing that it's in a hard drive and it's condensed somewhere.
You know, you were talking about papers, and I me di cuenta. I just
realized
that I don't use paper. I bought in Office Depot a box of paper
mm-hmm.
10 years ago, and I just finished the last page.
Really?
Yes. You know, 10 rings?
Uh-huh.
And I just finished the
in
last 10
years?
One. Yes.
Oh, there you go.
I don't use papers. Only when I need to print something to give it to someone, or I need to read something in public or something like that. But I don't use it. I do everything in computers. You send me a contract, and I don't print it to sign. I sign in the computer, and I send it back.
Mm. Yeah. That's the way it should be. I have everything in jump drives too.
Mm-hmm.
What papers I do have at home are old.
Yeah. And the thing is, when I, for example, I'm going to do a poster for
mm-hmm.
someone, a flyer for any kind of a graphic job. So I start looking. I do my research about the style, what will be the better for this kind of event or whatever. So I start to put in a folder pictures, things that I think is good for
mm-hmm.
me to recreate whatever I need to do. And at the end of my project, I have a big folder with a lot of pictures, a lot of material, a lot of things. And the thing is, I don't throw it off. I just keep it there, and I start another project, and my desktop is full of folders, and when I need space, I put all this folder in one folder that says desktop, and I put the date. One day, I have to go there and look what I need. And it's one after the other. I have a lot of folders like that.
So I need to clean up my
house. And that's fine, but at least, you know, it's there. It's not cluttering up your mind.
No.
See? It's not in the way every single minute, like if it were in your house.
Oh, my God.
See? If it were in your house, yeah, you would have to throw all of that away.
I had a neighbor, and when I lived in Miami Beach, one day he never opened the door for anybody or something, nothing. He was inside, and nobody knew what he had inside. And I know why. One day he invited me. He wanted to show me something. Because we became friends. When I entered in that apartment, it was a small apartment, one bedroom, and the only place that wasn't papers and magazines and it was from the floor to the ceiling, full of pack of magazines and he didn't have any space, any chair, any table, anything. The only place that was empty was the bathroom.
Mm. And what did he want to go in there for?
I don't know, to show me something in the bathroom. I don't remember, nothing important. But when I entered and I saw that, I was so scared. I thought if something happened and he tries to I don't know, if a sparkle comes here, you know, to this department, this is gonna blow the building away.
I hear you.
Very, very dangerous.
Well, you know, we have an essence.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that we don't know that we have this divine essence within us. And when you're in touch with your essence, when you're in touch with your essence, you know it. You have to be in the present in order to be in touch with your present. You can feel it. You can actually feel. Sometimes we pray and we say, "Oh God, please help me," and we're looking outside of ourselves for God. When in reality, that essence is within you, and you just have to know that it's there. And a lot of us don't believe. We say we believe in God, but when it comes time to really trusting in God, it doesn't happen. And then we say, well, you know, God doesn't want to help me. Well, we're not praying to God the way we think we are.
Mm-hmm.
See, we don't know that that our essence is within us. So we have to listen to that part of us that is sacred, because it's there. And you'll see what happens is that you have a feeling.
Uh-huh.
You get into any situation, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to buy a house.
Okay.
Okay. And so you go and you look at houses and you look at houses. And every time you see a house, you love it. Blah, blah, blah. See, that's your essence telling you, no, this is not the house.
Uh-huh.
See? And then suddenly you walk into a house and it's like, you know, firecrackers go off. And there is no doubt in you, this is the house. I know it, this is the house. See? And you can feel it and you know it until you buy the house. But in little things, in everyday things, we don't listen to that. You see somebody that you like. But yet something inside of you that says, oh, don't do that. Don't go there. Whatever you do, just don't go there. And we don't pay attention to it.
Yes.
That's our essence saying, no, that's not for you. See? And so when we don't pay attention to that divine essence that's within us, life doesn't go right. You have to understand that life, your existence, your very existence depends upon you paying attention, because it's there.
Yeah.
You know,
we keep making mistakes and we keep doing things that we know that are not in our best interest. And we judge. Because you did something you weren't supposed to do, you didn't listen to your essence, and now you're saying I should have listened. Because we do that. We say, I know I shouldn't have done that, but I did it anyway.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but we suffer because we didn't get our way. So now the relationship that I thought I had is, I don't have it anymore. He doesn't love me anymore, and whatever, you know. And so we're suffering because now our relationship broke up or whatever it was, you know. And so, I'm getting a divorce and my husband doesn't love me and he's got another person, another woman or another man or whatever. What am I going to do? So what is it that's really going on? You're not unhappy because the relationship broke up. That's not why you're unhappy. Why do you think you're unhappy?
Because your illusion.
There you go.
Because
we create an illusion around a decision that we make. You buy a lottery ticket. You don't buy the lottery ticket and say, okay, maybe I'll hit, maybe I won't. No, mm-hmm. You buy a lottery ticket and you already start spending your money. When I hit the lottery, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that.
When I give my brother this much and the other brother, no, I'm going to give you so much because he's not.
Yeah,
you know,
and already you're fighting with your brothers and everybody else.
Oh, bro, what is going to think me and my other brother?
Sure, I'm going to give my brother this much. I'm going to invite them to my house. Well, but they never come to my house. And they're going to say, well, why should I go to your house? You have to talk to me. Well, tell me over the phone. And, you know, and don't they understand that I'm going to give them millions of dollars? No, I'm not going to give them anything. And when I buy my house, I'm not going to invite them to my house. And you're fighting with people that you haven't even won. And your chances of winning are next to nothing.
And this is the same thing, you know, when in a relationship, not only a sentimental relationship, mm-hmm. you know, professional relationships, sometimes you start to have an internal
dialogue
with yourself, but it's like the other person is telling you, you know, I'm gonna tell my boss this is not right. He's abusing, you know, my confidence, and he's making me work too much for the money but my boss is going to tell me, yeah, but so I'm going to tell him,
you start
a drama, and the worst thing is that you are feeling whatever this person in your head is saying,
mm-hmm.
if this person is hurting you are feeling that.
You're feeling, yes, and you feel the anger, and you feel,
yes.
It's like the jack.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Spanish
yeah.
is called the cat.
So the time is almost finished.
Oh.
I just want to remind you that Dr. Nidia has her books and her meditations in Amazon.com and a lot of online libraries. Her book, the name is Letting Go of Resistance, The Inner Work Journey. And she has a meditation for relaxation and sleep. And she also have another book in Spanish and the same meditation in Spanish. Very good. And it's Letting Go of Resistance is a very, very good book. Very easy to read.
And it's in English.
It's
and the meditation is in English too.
Yes.
Both English and Spanish.
Yes. And it's a good, good tool for people with anxiety, low self-esteem, depression, and, you know, all these kind of feelings that destroy your life. And it's a very good book that give you all the tools to
get out of that situation you are living in this moment. So it's in Amazon.com. Search for Dr. Nidia and you'll have it. We'll be back on next Sunday for our show in English, and Fridays at 2:30 in Spanish. So we leave you with "How Can Anyone Tell You?"
That's by Shane and all.
And bye.
Bye.